You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. And it's a Friday, and we've already had a change. All right, so normally Kim Holmes, we talk cooking in the first hour on Friday. We're changing that up today. We'll talk cooking in the second hour. We'll talk F-18 stuff in the first hour. Our F-18 explainer-in-chief, retired Marine Corps Lieutenant Colonel Kurt Rudy Knowles. Rudy, for his seven attempts to get into flight school. That's right. Never gave up the little engine that could. Anyway, Rudy's going to join us, F-18 guy, and he's going to explain an investigation that was released in March that I didn't see that I wanted to talk about because it has implications for the Marine Corps. And to be honest with you, you know, I mean, I look at stuff every day. I did not see a lot written about this. I didn't see anything written about it. And I missed the one article that I found now. But kind of interesting because it has huge implications for the Marine Corps and what they're asking their pilots to do. And so, if you recall, about almost a year ago, I believe in July, a night gun run, a pilot who's a Top Gun guy and a WTI weapons, weapons tactics instructor from the school in Yuma, high-speed guys, right? They send their best guys to that school, and certainly you don't get into Top Gun without being one of the best guys. He has a crash, a fatal crash, in a single seat F-18 at night during a strafing run. I want to say it was his third strafing run. The investigation, was released in March. So we'll have Kurt comes on. He's awesome. Comes on and explains these kind of things to us, to we laymen, and women, about what does this mean? So we like him for doing that. Anyway, to accommodate his work schedule. Exactly. Now I get it, Mac. To accommodate his work schedule, we're flexing a little bit this morning. So we'll do that. So we'll talk F-18s. We'll come back and talk food, and then the gunner joins us, and I'm not exactly sure what we'll talk about. Normally something interesting with Mike, so that's the program today. Today marks the one-year anniversary of the launching of All Marine Radio. That's right. Happy birthday to us today. So tomorrow's officially the start of the second year. But today's the one-year anniversary. A year ago, it was a Thursday. Well, actually, it was a Wednesday, I think, that we started, and it was the holiday weekend, and so we started on June 1st. That's right. The Commandant of the Marine Corps, our first guest, and so he'll rejoin us here shortly, and not today, but in the not-too-distant future. He's been taunting me for some reason. I don't know why. So, no, it's been an awesome year. And so the second year starts with even better things going to happen. So happy birthday to us today. And Whitney Houston sings the national anthem on Friday. Good morning to you. crushes it.
Country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
All right, time to check the weather. I got stuff to do today. Sunny in 73 in Quantico, Camp Lejeune, partly sunny in 80. Granbury, Texas, home of the Gunner, partly sunny 76. Big Timber, Montana, home of Montana Man. Home of Montana Man, he's up. It's Montana, man, come on. They don't even sleep up there. They just chop wood all night. Big Timber, Montana, partly sunny in 62. 29 Palms, sunny 71. 29 Palms hasn't got too hot yet. Camp Pendleton, cloudy 63. Camp Smith in Hawaii, cloudy dark 77. Okinawa, cloudy and 74. Fallujah, sunny in 94. At the home of All Marine Radio, cloudy in 61. Looking for a high of 75 today in beautiful, sunny Southern California. Yeah. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Explainer-in-chief of things, F-18, joins us next, Kurt Knowles, and we're going to talk about an investigation that was released in March and what that means. More of All Marine Radio coming up next on our birthday. Boom, bitches. All you Mustangs, listen up. The Marine Corps Mustang Association is comprised of Marine Corps officers and officers from other military services who share a common background. They are a group of men and women who initially enlisted and served with distinction in the Marine Corps and the Marine Corps Reserve Enlisted rank. The term Mustang refers to a commissioned or warrant officer who has risen from the enlisted ranks. The Marine Corps Mustang Association was founded by Captain Robert Richter, United States Marine Corps retired, in Philadelphia on 10 November 1985 as a nonprofit veteran service organization. In their 33rd year of existence, the association continues to dedicate itself to the advocacy of professional development and the encouragement of younger Marines, demonstrating a pathway for advancement and offering mentoring, advice, and camaraderie over the course of their military service and civilian careers. The Marine Corps Mustang Association is looking for a few good Mustangs to join their association. Contact them via their website, MarineCorpsMustang.org. I say again, MarineCorpsMustang.org. Find them on Facebook. Go ahead and like them. Most importantly, join their association so that they can continue to do the great work that they've done for the past 33 years. Are you looking for the perfect gift for somebody who's in the military? For a first responder? For a hunter? For an outdoorsman? Or somebody that just likes cool military stuff? I've got the perfect gift for you. The Battle Mug. Starts at 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at BattleMug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. BattleMug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out. BattleMug.com.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
My name is Juan Perez, Jr. I joined the military in 98. I commissioned as an officer. But I always had in mind the idea that I would go into the special operations community, particularly the special forces. I was accepted to go into selection, and I attended on September 8th of 2001. As I was making my departure out of the military, there was that uncertainty. What do I do next? How do I repurpose my skills in a way that's not only meaningful to me, but also that provides for my family and provides an increase in our a way of living, a quality of life. The Global South Foundation has resources when it comes to anything from building resumes to how to relate to a CEO in conversation, how to basically, again, repurpose that which I had learned in a career in special operations, dealing at the strategic and operational level. How do I take that and then turn it towards entrepreneurial spirit into business development? And how do I translate that so somebody can see that value? And in doing so, I landed a magnificent and very rewarding career. I'm the VP of operations for an IT company called BuildSourced. What I say to veterans getting out, be bold. Be bold when you go to network. Go out to the Global South website. Look at what events they have lined up. Attend those events, you know, and participate. A lot of the events they hold, they're of key importance in this network. Go out there and engage, just like you would engage in a combat zone, you know, when you're networking there. With folks that don't share necessarily your language, your culture, or your background, and yet we still make it happen. How can we not make it happen here?
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines. You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. On a Friday, All Marine Radio turns one today. Yeah, we finally became a single-digit midget. We weren't even that. We were like a monthly urchin or something like that. I don't even know if there's a name for it. But now, that's right, single-digit midget. Joining me, we reshuffled the deck this morning as I blasted out on Facebook and Twitter. Kurt Knowles is our official F-18 explainer in residence, and he was supposed to come on at 8, but he's got to work today, so he's coming on at 7:15. We'll talk food at 8 or so, and so first of all, All Marine Radio turns 1. Happy birthday, huh?
I know. Isn't that amazing? I can't believe it. It's been awesome. I was going to tell you, when are you going to have General Miller back on? It's like he kicked it off. You got to have him back for the one-year anniversary.
Yeah, he's been taunting me, so I'm going to give him the rough ride this time. I'm not going to be like no more Mr. Nice Guy. Yeah, he's going to get the wire brush. He's been sending, like people call me, hey, I saw the Commandant, and your name came up, and he's like, why won't he have me on his program again? I said, oh, really? We're going to play that game now? So like 3 different people have told me that. All right, just tell him, look, he and I go back, so don't think I won't throw him under the bus. And, like, he hasn't always been the Commandant, okay? I know when you're the Commandant, it's like being the Pope. You're, like, infallible, right? Yeah, I knew you pre-Commandant, okay?
I knew you pre-Pope.
I knew you pre-Pope, and I am not afraid to share that information with people, just so you know. So we could
awesome.
We could do this the easy way, or we could do this the hard way. So the wanted to have you on today, and first of all, let's talk about you before we talk about investigations and stuff. The 5-minute bio and background on Kurt Knowles, call sign Rudy. Born and raised?
Seattle, Washington.
Okay, all right.
And with Eastern Washington University, I mean, you know, that's where proud to be from the Northwest, Seahawks fan, which I know you don't like to get into.
No, we don't need to. Although,
did you hear that?
Although, congratulations, you might get Colin Kaepernick.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's funny. I was kind of watching the Seahawks through the draft. And I was like, who are they going to get? I hope they get some linemen. And they did. But then what I understand is they traded and they got this amazing player from the Atlanta Falcons. So, you know, there's all these, you know how, I mean, you're from the professional sports land. I mean, there's those of us sitting in the cheap seats that are kind of like trying to speculate what's going on. And then there's a whole different world in the inside lane.
Right.
So.
Right. Where they know what's going on. Right. You thought that guy was throwing at that guy, but he wasn't. Okay? We know who hates who, we know who's throwing at who, and we know when it gets serious. You guys are just stupid, so just shut up and watch the ball game, okay? That's it. And so, okay, so you go to school at Eastern Washington, you join the Marine Corps as a finance guy.
I sure did.
Interesting little story. And grandfather fought on Iwo Jima, yes?
That's true, and then my father was in during Vietnam, so I'm third generation.
So was your grandfather alive when you got commissioned?
No, he wasn't. He survived Iwo Jima, and matter of fact, my mother was born like right when he got back, I think, or he didn't see her when she was born, right? So he met her after he came back from Iwo Jima. But then he passed when I was about 5-6 years old.
Well, you know what? Rudy, that's not a bad thing, because can you imagine if you would have said, hey, Grandpa, I'm a finance officer in the Marine Corps. He would have said, oh, man, come here, son. We got to go back behind the gym. I got to talk to you a little bit. And then,
it's funny because
he was
a machine gunner. My dad was, he was a mortarman. He was in 1-6.
Oh my God. Yeah. They both would have double teamed you. They'd have drug you back out behind the pool at Reasoner Hall. Why are those two men beating up that lieutenant? He's a finance officer. Oh my God!
When I left for OCS, my mother said my dad was like looking out the window, you know, for like an hour, like if they dropped me off early. You know how you get dropped off early in the morning at the airport,
right?
Like,
right.
Okay, see you. So she tells the story that they get home and he's kind of sipping coffee, looking out the window, and she's like, "What are you looking at?" And she's like, he's just kind of shaking his head, kind of in a proud way, but just like,
exactly.
He's not going to come back the same. Like, it's like a different, he's going to be a different guy after this, you know. You get a little different guy when you come back from that experience.
Yeah, so, exactly.
A little swagger, a little more confident, you know. Did I accomplish anything?
Even though you became a finance officer. All right. Dash 2 is running the streets of Kendall as we speak. So they grow up, they get around the world, and they see it a little bit. So then, that begins as you're a finance guy. That begins a little bit of an odyssey as you apply, what, 7 times, the story goes, to go to flight school.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, it's funny because I had actually, when I went in as a finance officer, I actually had a really great deployment there to Mombasa, Kenya. And then after that, I started getting kind of itched. Like, you know what? I always wanted to be a pilot. So I was like 14 years old. And then I was like, you know, I'm going to start applying. Well, I applied one time and it's still on those first orders that Camp Pendleton, I didn't get it, and I went down to MCRD to be a series commander, a company commander. And when I was down there, I started applying again. Well, the board convenes every 6 months. So, like, every 6 months, I was putting in another package, and then Yeah, seven times. I finally got it. So, but it wasn't just, I mean, there was a lot of behind the scenes, kind of, we were just talking about with draft picks. I mean, it ended up being like a random meeting with a guy named Lynn Walton, who I met literally at a bar. And he found out my story because we were just talking over a beer. And then he was having to be good friends with General Bolden, the astronaut in the Marine Corps, who at the time was the command general of the 3rd Marine Air Wing. And those two got behind me, and, you know, the rest is history. So, I mean, it's this whole random fluke meeting that a guy at a bar, you know, sees me, and we start talking and kind of find out he's, like, intimately involved with naval aviation and all this stuff.
Changes the trajectory of your life.
Yeah. You want to talk about like, higher power when you walk into a bar and a guy sees you?
I mean, okay, stop.
Yeah.
Stop with the higher power in a bar, okay? Stop. Who does the finances in your home, you or your wife?
Oh, Cindy, for sure.
So you,
she's a finance major from University of Illinois.
Yeah,
how am I going to sniff that?
I guess your MOS training is not going to help you right there. Okay.
Marine Corps MOS training or finance major from University of Illinois, graduate number one at the college. So
okay.
Who are you handed to?
All right. We'll concede that point. So how many deployments does an F-18 pilot?
How many
combat deployments?
Actually flying the aircraft, or how many combat deployments total?
Flying the aircraft.
One. On the USS John C. Stennis, it was about 8 months long.
Okay. And then once with RCT-1 in Helmand Province, and then back again flying what's the name of the jet that we fly?
We fly the UC-35. It's a Citation Encore. I did two combat deployments in that one.
Okay.
And then I did one more combat deployment back with 1st Marine.
That's right. I forgot about that.
NICTA.
Right.
Yeah.
So what, a total of four or five?
Combat deployments was
five.
One, two, three, four, five. Five.
Wow.
Five combat deployments.
All right. So and what version of the F-18 do you fly?
Off the carrier was the Charlie, single seat, the same one that Stranger was flying.
Okay.
Single seat F-18.
All right. So now, so that's Kurt's background, just so you know. Let's talk about the incident. And then we'll talk about the investigation. So explain to everybody the incident that occurred. It'll be a year ago in July.
Well, the incident, as you can read in the Marine Corps Times, and I think the Marine Corps Times does a pretty good job. It's unfortunate they don't articulate it. It's almost like I kind of feel bad in a way that they didn't have an F-18 pilot review what they wrote. I read the article, and they're talking about terminologies and stuff. So if anyone's pulling up the article, or as you finished listening to this and they have pulled the article, I think I need to clarify some things.
Okay, we'll get to that. We'll get to that. But just lay out what he was doing and as part of the enhanced combined arms exercise that we're doing. So what is he doing that?
Sure.
Night?
Sure. He was doing some night strafing. So when you say strafing, that's, you know, employing with our machine gun on the nose of the aircraft. And usually it's kind of a, you pitch in at night. It's not a super aggressive dive angle, but, you know, 20 to 40 degree dive angle with, and you're strafing on, you're in the chute for about 6 to 10 seconds, and, you know, you're on the trigger for about one to two seconds, and then you pull off. So he's employing the with our machine gun, our weapon system with the aircraft, direct fire, you know, same thing as, you know, if your guys are just thinking of shooting a machine gun, but we're just shooting it out of the nose of the aircraft.
Got it. Okay, so explain to everybody real quick what that entails in terms of instructions from the ground. You're up there at night, and what you're doing.
So what they're doing is, obviously, is, you know, our combined arms of, you've got a forward controller who's getting the targets either from whoever he's rolling with. It could be the company commander, it could be a platoon commander, it could be a squad leader. Like, look, we want to employ on this target. They get approval. They get the grid coordinates, and then they send all that up to the pilot. And then the pilot, you know, says, okay, I've got this amount of ordnance, or I have this type, and that I can do this. So then they basically start working the attack geometries so that they're not going to strafe any friendlies,
right,
and also so that the aircraft is able to recover and not hit anything or pull off, so that it's in the safe parameters, right? So that it's facts looking at, okay, I need him to be at this altitude, and then, you know, then they're going, yep, I can, at that altitude, I can employ safely and all that kind of stuff. So they're all, it's kind of checks and balance that everybody's kind of doing. You've got to understand the aircraft as a fact, which, I mean, that's what I did with you when I was in Afghanistan.
Right.
And then as an F-18 pilot, you've got to understand, okay, this is how much ordnance I have for, and these are the parameters I need to fly to employ this safely. So there's a lot of checks and balances that both, you know, subject matter experts are both doing to make sure they can employ effectively and get the weapons, you know, on target and make the effects. Essentially, what do we want? We want these effects, so we got to make sure we do this, you know, so that we're not hurting other people or hurting ourselves.
Okay, now, so he's up there by himself. So explain, what is the plane on autopilot? Are you cutting a big circle up there in the sky as you're looking at a map? I mean, I think part of us believes that you're punching grid coordinates into a computer and this is all happening. What is he doing up there? Hello? Okay, that's not good.
How's that? You got me?
Yeah, I got you. I got you now. Go ahead.
I was just switching headsets.
Got it.
I heard everything you said, though.
Okay.
So what makes it always a little bit harder was single pilot, right? You're having to talk. You're having to navigate. So it's called aviate, navigate, communicate. It's a very simple terms in aviation speak. Aviate, navigate, communicate. Aviate is you're flying the plane. Navigating, you got to make sure you're going in the direction that you want to be going. And in communicating, you're doing it on, doing talking to whoever your ground controllers are, or maybe you're talking to somebody else in the air, right? So he's doing all of that single pilot. When you have two, when you have what we call a weapon systems officer, they are in the back. They're punching all those coordinates into the jet, all the grid coordinates, and they're essentially really being the weapons employment expert of how am I going to get this weapon on deck accurately. The pilot's the ultimate authority on pulling the trigger, or we call push the pickle button, but the weapon system officer in the forward air controller FAC type of, you know, combined arms regime really plays a good part of making sure that the pilot can fly while they're inputting all the coordinates. Well, when you're single pilot, you're doing all that yourself. You're flying, you're communicating, you're navigating, you're doing all that, and you're making sure that you've got all the correct coordinates in there. It is a serious, serious handful, and you've got to be really good at it. And Stranger was. I mean, he's went to Top Gun and WTI. He's one of the best. Now,
okay, so I want you to stop right there. So it's a busy place. He's having to do this by himself at night. He's eminently qualified, though. As you said, he's a Top Gun guy. He's a WTI guy. Those are the credentials of a made elite pilot, yes?
Absolutely. And,
okay.
And you asked me, do we have autopilot? We do have autopilot. So you can put it on, we call it a pilot relief mode in the F-18. We have what's called auto throttles, where you click a button and the aircraft will hold the speed that you asked it to hold. And we have what's called pilot relief mode of auto flight, where it'll hold essentially your altitude, and if you slew a heading, it can't hold like an angle of bank, like you can't
do
a circle,
right,
but it'll hold wings level, and then you can roll your heading bug and it'll turn. So there's ways to what we call relieve duties for the pilot relief modes, and we have that in F-18, a very good one. And so it's not like he's trying to hand fly and write things down. I mean, he can click on the autopilot, and then he can write stuff on his knee board for the grid coordinates, for where the friendlies are. We call it our nine line. You write down your nine line, and then he can input that nine line into his, type it all into his computer, into his jet, and then he can employ, right? So it's a step-by-step-by-step process. You write it down, you input it in the computer, you read it back. Yes, what I'm reading back is correct. It's what the ground controller sees and what they want. And then you basically you press into the target. So that's how it works.
Okay. All right. Now, can you talk to us about, can you talk to us about the findings of the investigation? What did they find that actually happened? Because one of the reasons that this has stayed in my head is a conversation that you and I had after it happened when you came on to explain some of the stuff we're talking about right now, is that there was a report in the Washington Post that the airplane had broken apart before impact. And you were pretty unhappy about that, written by a former Marine infantryman, I might add, by the name of Thomas Gibbon Neff. And we were talking about how the hell would anybody know at night somebody happens to be watching the aircraft on night with night vision goggles, how would they know if it broke up? And you were pretty adamant about that. And so I want you to talk about the findings of the investigation and what actually happened. And then I want to talk about that little piece of reporting. So go ahead, please.
Okay, so the findings found, once again, high workload. Now, you do all of that, what I just explained, of trying to get that into the computer and all that. Then you put goggles on and you do it at night. And it just makes it, for the infantry guys, imagine now we're going to go do a night fire. Like, it's just, things are a lot harder at nighttime. Landing on the carrier is a lot harder at night than it is during the day. So what they found is high workload, night strafing. I've done night strafing in combat one time, and it was super high task saturated, man. Like, I came off target. I was disoriented. It's not easy. It is not, I shouldn't even say not easy. It is super hard. It is really hard to do. So you're talking, like, for a stranger to be doing that, he's at the tip of the spear of being a very, very good pilot. I happen to do it. I wasn't one of the best pilots in the squadron, but I just happened to be, I was in combat. This is what the FAC wanted, and I employed. But to be honest with you, like, I was out of parameters, like, twice. It wasn't until my third time in that I was actually in a safe parameters to squeeze the trigger, and I still wasn't perfect. I still was off. It is just so hard to do it at night. It's just, you're on instruments. You know what I mean? You're on instruments. You don't have the ground visual reference. So what they found is nighttime, high workload. They also found that he was on, quote unquote, his last run. So they believe that he was starting to think about how much fuel does he have to get back to Miramar? How much, okay, I've got this many rounds left, I could probably give him about a 2 second trigger pull or whatever the case may be. So they found that in there, that he was probably not exactly thinking about this one last run, that he was probably thinking about what we call our admin stuff, is what do I have left for fuel? How am I going to get home?
Right.
The last thing they found, which is probably the most crucial, is he employed out of parameters. So when I say that is he started lower than his previous runs, right? So he also, he came off target, or he started his pull way late. So at nighttime, you've got to make sure, especially because you have no ground visual reference, you've got to make sure your parameters are perfect, right? Because you just don't have that ground reference. And what the findings and what the article says, and what I want to clarify, is it talks about the system saying pull up, pull up. What that is your terrain altitude warning system, or what we call our GPWS, a ground proximity warning system. That assesses your trajectory, your angle towards the ground, and if it senses that you might hit the ground, it'll go, pull up, pull up, whoop, whoop, pull up, pull up. Well, it went off, but either he didn't hear it or he initiated late, and for that to go off, Mac, that means he was way lower than he should have been, right? So it went off. So he's now getting warning systems from the aircraft that you are way low, you're going to hit the ground, right? And that was found in the article, or in the investigation. So what's really unfortunate is you got one of our best pilots in the world, and he's kind of got in the trap of, I can do this. I can make it happen. I can do this. And even the best guys, even the best guys, if you're outside parameters, you know, it's like a race car driver entering into a turn. You know, it's like you could be the best NASCAR driver out there, but if that car can only hold, you know, 4 G's at 140 knots going into this turn and you're doing 180, even the best driver isn't going to be able to make that turn. And this is a case of even the best pilot, if you're outside parameters, unfortunately, some guys get to recover and literally do like safety stand downs and brief the squadron like, I'll never do this again. Or we're looking at it on paper going, holy crap, this can't ever happen again, and now we got to talk about it, you know. And he's not the first guy to have this happen to in any means, and he's not the first guy to have this happen to at 29 Palms because of the rising terrain out there. It's dark, and if you're not 100% focused in 29 Palms, it can really bite you. It really can.
Okay, the email.
So let me say one more thing.
Okay.
So if everyone reads the article and they say, well, what's this thing talking about the paddle switch? So the F-18 is rated at 7.5 G's. So remember, it's a totally computerized aircraft. So you're just a voting authority when you pull that stick. The aircraft assesses, okay, they're going this fast, at this altitude, it's this degrees Celsius outside, then I need to do this with the flight controls. Because he wants this amount of stick information, so he's going to go, all right, well, I'm going to pitch this hard. So the aircraft's flight controls are moving like super quick. They're almost like, it looks like they're fluttering. Well, in the cockpit, you're just moving the stick around and you're a voting authority of what you want. Well, the aircraft's computerized flight controls limit you to 7.5 G's in the F-18 so you don't overstress the aircraft. Well, we have what we call a paddle switch. It's just below, like, where your hand normally rests around the stick. Just below that, you can kind of, if you just take your hand, I know it kind of sounds weird, but if you make a hand motion, like you're going to backhand somebody, like slap them across the face, put that between your leg.
Not that we would ever do that, right? But yeah. Yes, I'm familiar with it.
But if you put that between your legs, that's about how your hand sits on a stick. Well, if you rotate your wrist down and not really move your elbow, just rotate your wrist down, you have what's called a paddle switch. And it's about the size of two pins put together. And you can pull that and you can override the computer. And that will essentially give you like max deflection of all control surfaces. And you could probably pitch the thing at like 9-10 G's. You'd overstress the aircraft, but it might be what's required to save your life. Well, the investigation, that's what they're talking about, a paddle switch. Like he didn't even have, I don't know if he had time, or I don't even know if he initiated what we call the paddle maneuver, where you just paddle up, paddle it and pull all you have to get away from the ground. Like he impacted pretty so fast, you know what I mean? He was that low before he even started pulling, I think.
Okay.
So,
my guest this morning is retired Marine Corps Lieutenant Colonel F-18 pilot Kurt Knowles, call sign Rudy. Emailer says this, the meaning of Rudy as a call sign just hit me. Awesome. Yeah, so that takes a little explaining to do, but so glad we could do that this morning. The next more serious question is this, and we talked about it. Either way this investigation turned out, if it was airframe problem, it was not going to be good for the Marine Corps. Because of the state of readiness of the F-18 community. I guess for the maintainers, they breathe a sigh of relief, and for the people that in procurement and that are trying to put F-18s together, they all breathe a sigh of relief. The training people and the safety people, though, there is no sigh of relief, because the other issue was the delta, the difference between what pilots consider or what the aviation community calls current, which is a minimum number of hours to be called current in the air platform, and another number that they call, you know, proficient. And when you're not proficient, but you're current, and then try something like this, would you care to comment on that in terms of this is just me reading what I've read as a grunt and having followed this issue. Here you have one of the most highly qualified, and probably no reason why he was doing this, pilots in the squadron, Top Gun guy, WTI guy, complicated event at night, and so he's sent up there to do that. His lack of proficiency, and which I mean current proficiency, his lack of repetitions because of the training dollars and the other issues that we have in the Marine Corps, is a huge contributing factor to this thing happening. Yes or no?
I think the way you articulated, Mac, was very, it was so well put, because you're nailing everything. You're shacking targets, man. Like, it's all about currency and proficiency. I don't know what his hours were that month, but I can tell you that from what the investigation, what I'm reading is he entered into parameters. He entered into this regime outside of parameters. So even if you had flown five times this week, if you enter into an attack, if you go in outside of parameters, unsafe things are going to happen. And so what I'm reading, and it's really sad, is I don't think he didn't put himself in a good situation. Now, would more proficiency have prevented that? I don't know. I don't know. I mean, you are absolutely correct. There's a huge component right now in the F-18 community between being current and proficient, and I agree with you 100%. I don't know what his hours were that month, but I can tell you what the investigation is finding is currency and proficiency is absolutely a relevant factor, but in this case, documentation or what they're finding and what the investigation showed was that he entered in outside parameters. So those literally, we call it our Z diagrams, Mac, where, like, you know, when you employ a weapon system, I mean, you know it better than I do, but like, if you employ a machine gun and it's rated to employ at this trajectory and it will land in this vicinity, and now you point that machine gun in a completely different way that's not even documented or not even, we don't even have charts for this.
Right.
What do you think is going to happen? I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. Well, we have what's called our Z diagrams, and it's weird. It's like I'm like literally drawing a Z in the sky right now as I'm saying this, but it tells you where you're going to start, where you're going to, what your holding pattern altitude is, where you're going to enter in for the beginning of your strafe, where you're going to employ your machine gun or weapon, and then where you're going to come off target. It has all that, right? It's called your Z diagram. Well, if you're outside your Z diagram, that Watts is kind of saying, dude, you're in test pilot land. Like, we don't have documentation for that. Like, you're cowboying it. You know what I mean? And that's really sad. It's hard for me to say out loud, but what I'm reading is that he was outside of parameters. He was not, he kind of got in that, and we call it aviation, no fast hands in the cockpit. Like, if there's a time to slow down, it's when you're not proficient and it's at nighttime and your bucket is full. Like, you've got to take a breath. And this is, you know, what's really hidden there is when you say, this is my last run, I got one more, you know, give me one more time. You know, it's like, I can do it. I can get you one more. In the back of the mind, it's thinking, shit, I got this amount of fuel. If I get him one more time off target, okay, that'll give me about 40 minutes, home. Hopefully weather's still good at Miramar. You know what I mean? It's like he's thinking also about some other stuff going on and maybe not. And then he's like, oh, crap, I'm outside parameters. So I can do it. I got this. And then he rolls in. He's outside parameters again. He's like, well, I got to get rid of these bullets. Then they don't have to download them all. So I'll hold the trigger for this amount of time. Then he's in the shoot, and he's like, all of a sudden.
Okay, let me stop. Let me stop you right there. So he's all that's going through his head, to include fuel, to include, like all of us, as we're adult Marines, right? If I don't unleash this ammunition, then the weapons, the ammunition tech's got to come out. That's another, you know, pain in the ass. That's going to make this thing longer tonight, you know. And so let me get rid of this stuff and be a team player. He enters the run 1,100 feet below. Does he not notice that? Because that's, I mean, I guess if he notices that, certainly different. Your thoughts on that?
It would be hard to not notice that.
Right.
If I was to speculate, he's like, I kind of got that. I got this. All right. If I enter in now, then I'll just come, if I go in lower, then I'll come off earlier.
Right.
Like now he's doing like, he's kind of John Wayne in it, so to speak. Like, well, if I, you know, that quick mental math, like, well, if I go in a little bit lower, then I'll just come off earlier,
right.
You know what I mean? Or whatever the case may be. And you're again, you're in uncharted territory. You know, you're kind of, it's, yeah, it's a tough to be in. So.
So the bottom, one final question before you go. You and I were both, you and I were both pretty rip shit about the comment in the Washington Post about the aircraft falling, coming apart before it impacted. Your thoughts on that? And this is a former Marine infantryman, writing for the Washington Post, speculating the day after this happens, which means somebody calls him from out wherever the hell they were, Quackenbush Lake or whatever the hell this shit happened. And then he goes ahead and prints that stuff. Your thoughts on that? To me, it's unprofessional
It's totally unprofessional. It's exactly what you and I talked about, and it's exactly what I said is the Marine Corps is going to handle it in a professional way. They're going to figure out what exactly took place. They're going to own it. They're going to learn from it. Throw out some flippid, unprofessional comment because you're trying to get FaceTime in public, and oh, look, I've got breaking news. You have no
right.
idea what happened. You don't have the flight data recorder. You can't see anything. You look at up in the sky at nighttime, and you tell me what those aircraft are doing. Nothing that you can see.
Right.
Okay? So don't try and start throwing out something and firing from the hip because you're trying to get FaceTime in the public sector. It was absolutely unprofessional, and it was disgusting, to be honest with you. It was really disappointing. Marines don't do that to other Marines, and it was totally unprofessional. I'll tell you that when I was in Afghanistan and I was flying off a really good pilot named Woody Woodworth, and we got called in to do what's called a show of force, right? And this is in northern Afghanistan, a little more mountainous territory. And Woody says, "Hey, Rudy, why don't you just go ahead and take this one?" And I felt, you know, like, wow, he's handing this to me. That's a big deal to do a night strafe run or a night show of force. Like it's not an easy run. And I felt really kind of like, wow, Woody's got a lot of trust in me to do this. Well, I came in to do the show of force, dude, and my systems went off, what we call a radar altimeter, and it's like whoop, whoop. And imagine just flying into a black hole. Like all I did at that moment was just plant the stick to the back of my crotch, so to speak, and just get the hell away from the ground. Like it was... I mean, my heart's racing right now thinking about it. Like, it was absolutely terrifying that I had pitched my aircraft in low altitude, 400, 500 knots, and all of a sudden, I'm thinking I'm in a safe regime, and all of a sudden, whoop, whoop, it's like, you're about ready to hit the ground. Like, it was totally terrifying, and I still get chills thinking about it right now.
First of all, thanks for doing this morning. I know you're a busy guy. We tried to do it last night, but I was falling asleep. And now that he's retired, he didn't get up at 6 o'clock like he told me he would. And so I appreciate you flexing for this. But, again, one of the things I love about All Marine Radio is the ability to do this so people can hear about, one, we have a problem in the Marine Corps, and that is that Delta for F-18 pilots and their families live with it every day now. When your husband goes off to fly, you know, because of the state of the platforms, and knock on wood, you know, we haven't had anything happen in the last couple months. But it's not a comfortable situation for those pilots or their families. And I know we all like to say, you know, yeah, I got this. Well, right now in the F-18 community, they don't got that. You know, they're doing the best they can. And with a shit sandwich and not enough money to train, not enough platforms to train on. It's just not a good thing. And so thank you for coming on, explaining these concepts to us. But I'll tell you what, there's no doubt in my mind when you have a guy that skilled, right? His lack of repetitions wasn't a material contributing factor to this. There's no doubt in my mind. And so, I guess some people breathe a sigh of relief that it wasn't the platform, but certainly, in my opinion, the training and the delta between current and proficient was a huge contributing factor to a very, very qualified pilot losing his life. And so thank you.
Yeah, I agree.
Thank you for coming on.
No, I appreciate it.
No, thank you for coming on and doing this. And a friend of ours, I wouldn't say anything. I know you got to get to work. Thank you.
Okay, brother. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. That is Rudy, Kurt Knowles, Lieutenant Colonel type, United States Marine Corps, F-18 pilot, former finance guy, and what I probably owe Thomas Gibbons Neff is the opportunity to come on and explain why he wrote that. So I'll contact him and see if he would like to come on and talk about it. Because reporters are supposed to report. And that did not make life easy for anybody, I would imagine. And it was wrong. And the term that Kurt used yesterday was CFIT, controlled flight into terrain. And what that means is the aircraft was operational when it hit the deck. All systems were operational, and so there was obviously a pilot error. So anyway, my thanks to him for coming on and doing that. But shitty. We're going to talk food. We're going to go from that to food. So our All Marine Radio head chef is going to join us next. We're going to talk about a little bit of summer food safety stuff. Grilling and storing food different ways outside and stuff like that. So we'll talk a little bit of that. Take your calls and questions, or take your questions anyway. And we'll take your calls too. We'll go ahead and talk a little food. Then the gunner's going to join us. So my thanks to Kurt Knowles for being flexible this morning and helping us out and explaining that. And to the family of Stranger, Captain Richard Norton, thoughts and prayers go out to them as they continue this Memorial Day, the first one they spent without a father, a husband, and whatnot. So, rough stuff. Anyway, more of All Marine Radio coming up next. This hour of All Marine Radio is brought to you by our friends at Battle Mug, home of the world-famous Battle Mug. Starts with 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light, put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at battlemug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out, battlemug.com.
My name is Juan Perez, Jr. I joined the military in 98. I commissioned as an officer. But I always had in mind the idea that I would go into the special operations community, particularly special forces. I was accepted to go into selection, and I attended on September 8th of 2001. As I was making my departure out of the military, there was that uncertainty. What do I do next? How do I repurpose my skills in a way that's not only meaningful to me, but also that provides for my family and provides an increase in our a way of living, a quality of life. The Global South Foundation has resources when it comes to anything from building resumes to how to relate to a CEO in conversation, how to basically, again, repurpose that which I had learned in a career in special operations, dealing at the strategic and operational level. How do I take that and then turn it towards entrepreneurial spirit, into business development, and how do I translate that so somebody can see that value? And in doing so, I landed a magnificent and very rewarding career. I'm the VP of operations for an IT company called BuildSourced. What I say to veterans getting out, be bold. Be bold when you go to network. Go out to the Global South website. Look at what events they have lined up. Attend those events, and participate. A lot of the events they hold, they're of key importance in this network. Go out there and engage, just like you would engage in a combat zone, when you're networking there. With folks that don't share necessarily your language, your culture, or your background, and yet we still make it happen. How can we not make it happen here?
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marine.